Welcome to the program Beyond Winning, where we discuss the many aspects of high school basketball from the perspective of coaches and the individuals that have dedicated most of their lives to the game. Here we want to provide insight into the coaches' strategies, intent, and the impact of coaches as it relates to the development of young men and women who pursue the game. We will discuss the history and highlights, the successes and instances where success escaped them. We want to get at the soul of coaching. We want to get beyond the X's, beyond the O's, and beyond winning. Returning to the program today are Coach Kerry Sargent and Coach Clarence C.J. Johnson. These coaches have experienced the game at the highest levels, and they are unique in the fact that they have achieved working with both talented young men and young women. They coach in high school at Mallet Creek, as well as run one of the oldest Charlotte AAU programs, the Charlotte Nets. And they are AAU Hall of Famer. Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for being here. Well, this question, and this is just to kind of get the juices flowing, but you know what time it is, where we are in the current landscape of basketball. All eyes are on what's happening over the next couple of days. So while this doesn't relate to high school, let me put this question out there about what is the significance from a coach's perspective? I'm asking this question as a fan, but I'm asking you guys to answer this as a coach. What is the significance of the achievement of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Miami Heat, a la LeBron James? Well, and I think I don't know. I think we're gonna get two different flavors on this one.
I'm not sure what the question was in terms of the achievement of the Miami Heat and the Cleveland Cavaliers, but I can tell you this: Coach CJ has a bias toward LeBron that I'm not gonna share. I will share.
it's straight no chaser. That's the fans have expected that of you.
He knows LeBron. He met LeBron in a personal situation, so he knows him more as a person, not as a close relationship, but he met him under different circumstances, other than just being a player. So I think he has a little bit of a bias. He's not going to tell you that. That's why I'm here. I'll let you know what the bias is.
Okay, all right.
But, my problem with LeBron is not necessarily with LeBron, but the circumstances in which he went back to Cleveland. I, for one, didn't really have a problem with him going to Miami because I think that he had served his time in Cleveland and had a right to leave and go wherever he wanted to go. But the ownership treat him like he was a runaway slave. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
He couldn't leave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did his time. He didn't ask for more money, anything like that. He just did his time, went to Miami and tried to win some championships, which he did. And then he decides to go back to Cleveland. Now, I understand the people in Cleveland wanted him back, but they burned his jersey.
Yeah.
They called him all kind of names.
Yeah.
And he went back and won them a championship for that same owner. I can't ride with that.
Yeah, so for you it's more of a philosophical, it's a stake was put in the ground when he left.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, if the man write a letter and pretty much call him whatever he called him.
Yeah.
Then I got a problem with that. That's part of my Mississippi upbringing, I guess.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I hear you on that. Well, Coach C, you know.
I really didn't even think of that's a valid point the coach has. I really didn't look at it because technically I don't give a about the owner. Mm-hmm. The owner put his game out, and now we know how where the owner stands. So I really didn't even pay that part attention. I just get caught up in the fact that this whole LeBron movement of trying, folk trying to prove that LeBron's better than Mike, or Mike, I said the other day on Facebook, Mike is Mike, LeBron is LeBron, and just appreciate the moment.
Right.
Folk are digging for news. They're trying to make LeBron say things, you know, I guess negative toward Mike, and he's just not that type. He's not that type of guy. So I just, you know, from working in the hood all my life, I just appreciate the accomplishments that LeBron has made based on his family background.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get past it. It amazes me how articulate and business-minded and all that kind of stuff that he brings to the table with no formal education that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and on that note, that's why I get caught up with Stephen A. Smith. Now when he talks about LeBron, he prefaces all of that because he knows people are going to bring that up. And then he talks about the fact, well, LeBron has lost 6 championships. Mike's done this or that. So,
But what about, what does it say about just being there? I mean, well, for the past 8 years, we can't even have a discussion in June without talking about him.
Exactly. I mean, and I get in debates with people about that all the time. Like one of my buddies says, you know, LeBron should have just lost because it makes no sense for him to go to the championship. And I look at him like, for real? I mean, you know, just for him to get to the championship all these times in a row is unbelievable. But folk just get caught. They get caught up.
What, Kerry? You had something to.
No, I was going to say, what he's done is ridiculous, man. Yeah. You can't even, I mean, right now, he's that guy. And he's carrying a bunch of balls. I mean,
it's sad that you, and everybody looks at that way, but they're marginal pros. They're not, you know, they're not even, they use that definition of 3-star and 2-star and 4-star. They're 2- and 3-star NBA players, and he's carrying them, you know. And,
mm-hmm. Well, Finish that thought, Kerry.
I'm just saying, the guys that he's playing with right now are not as good as any of the teams he took before that I can remember, except maybe the first team when he went to the finals in Cleveland. But this group he has now, they can't go to the bench to really get any help. These young boys, they never been there before. And, he's having to play point guard, power forward, center. He's got to defend everybody. He's got to score every time they need a bucket.
But I would not disagree with either one of you. I would agree with that. But the thing that struck me, and I want you guys to speak on this as coaches and maybe how you translate this into maybe some of your teams. The thing that struck me is that in that conference finals press conference, he talked about he stood up for his guys. You know, he stood up for them publicly. Okay. Now, we know that a different conversation is being had in the gym.
Man, you know you wanted to slap the face out of J.R.
After that game, I mean, but nevertheless, okay. And I also think, and Coach CJ, you mentioned this. I think his upbringing clearly is reflected in his game. I think for him to go out there and dominate, which he knows he can do, is not as interesting as to take a group and bring them along, just like he had at St. Vincent St. Mary's. And I think even the fact that this group isn't as talented, I think that may even add more to the experience from his point of view.
So he can talk about it, but I think it's not by choice, it's by necessity. I mean, he's smart enough to recognize the talent he has around him. You know, he doesn't have Kyrie. He doesn't have the help that he had in previous years. So he's got to figure out how to manipulate the squad to get him to where he needs to win a championship. He's trying to win, So he's saying, I'm good enough to take whoever I have on the squad and get them to the championship and potentially to win. All they have to do is a few things to help me, and I can take them the rest of the way. That's the way players of that caliber think. You know, even at the high school level, if you got a player that's a big-time guy, he feels like, listen, if I'm on the team, just give me some guys with me, and I'll take them. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a scorer, if you're a shooter, that's a mentality that you have. And if you used to winning, that's the way it goes.
So now I'm going to I'm gonna let C respond, and then I'm gonna shift gears and go to another topic. But C, you got anything you wanna add on that?
The only thing that I'll say, it's great players out there that make other players better. One of the things, and we always joke about this, but we always use Chantel Williams as an example. When Chantel Williams came to Mallard Creek, she had no help, and we went through the regular season, maybe the third or fourth place team, but when we got to the tournament championship, she carried us and made all those marginal players around her better just by knowing their strengths and putting them in position to do some good things. So good players make other players better, but all good players don't have that skill, because we've had high-skilled girls that can't make other players better. They're good, but they have, you know, they can't make the other girls better. So, you know, LeBron has a unique skill, because it's obvious Kyrie can't do it. You know, it's a few guys that could do it. Took Mike a long time to make other guys better. Magic always did it, but so it's a gift that only a few have. And you know,
when Magic came in, who did he have to make better? He had Kareem, that's
true. But Word. But still, he could have gotten away if he had a tremendous ego and didn't want to buy into the. Yeah, he had some great dudes, but I still think in a lot of cases he's one of the best point guards in the business.
No doubt.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, coaches, we started this conversation talking about the greatest player right now. In kind of our pre-session, you know, there was a issue that you guys raised, so I'm gonna expound on this a little bit. And Coach C, you bought into this concept of you're looking at, you know, you got maybe 7-8 players in your rotation, but you get down to, you know, player 8, 9, and 10. And having a discussion there, but I really want to expound on what you were saying about everybody has to be involved in the practice.
Yeah, everybody. My concept is that everybody's got to be involved in order to win. Somebody's got to have a piece of it, be it a minute, 2 minutes, 2 points, whatever it is. Because in our business, in high school basketball, at any time anybody can go down. Academically, relationships, family issues, and it's definitely the next person up. So, you know, at some point you got to prepare them to, if it's your turn, that you're going to have to be ready. And from what I can see in our 10 years plus at Mallard Creek, we've had some great players, but some very marginal players have had to step up and do some things in order for us to be successful. That's kind of how I look at it. That's just, everybody has their style, and that might have a lot to do with my background as being maybe not the All-American, but the sixth man, fifth man, sixth man, seventh man throughout my career. So maybe where Sarge is an All-American, and he doesn't have those issues.
Honorable mention, All-American. What I did want to say about that situation, C is right. He does a great job in involving, you know, all the girls, making sure they keep busy, keep moving. my philosophy is a little bit different in that I like to fine tune the group that I know is going to be on the court most of the time. But as a head coach, and it works for him because our record shows that it works. And the girls love him, and they don't like me like that. So,
well, just like players have to play a role, coaches have to play a role. I mean, you know.
I'm over there cussing on the sideline, but I'm good with it because ultimately he's going to get blamed if it don't work. So, but no, I do like to fine-tune our plays. I like to fine-tune our defensive assignments to make sure that the people that's going to be on the court most of the time know exactly where to be when we make, because I like to play multiple defenses. I like to change defenses, coming out of timeouts, on the free throw line. And you got to have people all in sync and know what they're doing. When you are trying to teach, given the time that we have, you're trying to teach that. And you know some girls are a little slow to comprehend that. You have to focus on the ones that you know are going to be on the basketball court. It's not a big difference, but it works for what we do.
So it's also another aspect of teaching because, you know, once they get beyond you guys, I mean, you know, they have to learn to deal with these different personalities, these different styles, these different expectations.
You know, that's one of the things we talk about. We don't want any girls or any kids leaving our AAU program when they get to the next level to have the college coaches say they didn't learn anything. That's the most embarrassing thing that you can hear, that your kids are not being taught to play the game. And we focus on teaching fundamentals and teaching kids how to be good teammates and sharing the basketball and playing hard and defending and all of that. So we want to have that reputation when our kids leave the program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we always, you know, we have this discussion all the time how we're critical of when they come back in September and October and reference, well, what did y'all do all summer? I mean, you know, you traveled all around the world and played all these games, but you didn't get any better, you know. So, or even when they come from middle school, you know, and I do know that it's a lot more parameters in middle school because I coached at middle school and I know gym time and it's a whole bunch of things with that. But we always are real critical on when they come back to us, you know, what kind of progress have they made.
So you talked about this concept of travel. Okay, and, you know, Kerry, you know, with the AAU program, you know, more recently, CJ, you know, you being involved in AAU, you know, you go to these tournaments, and there's a fair amount of downtime. I mean, you know, you get ready for the games, you know, you play a game, then you got to wait for the next game to occur, you know, and it might be, you know, within a couple hours, it might be you play in the morning and you don't have another game until that evening. Just from an overall travel experience, what do you think, or what do you try to, you know, to do to handle that downtime and make it productive?
I don't know about any other programs. And when C was coaching AAU, it's a lot different than it is now in terms of kids having cell phones. And back when we coached together, we played cards and spent a lot of time together. But these kids are more individualistic. They spend a lot of time on the internet playing video games, and it's just a little bit different. So in terms of us having these, you know, if we go on a long trip, I've taken my kids to the Muhammad Ali Museum in Louisville, and when we go to Orlando, we do different things, but now it's not like it used to be. Kids want to spend time playing video games, and I want to take naps, so it's a little bit different.
Well, what I learned from Sarge, from a high school perspective, it's a bonding time for us, so when we have an opportunity to go to a tournament, it gives us a chance to. The big thing that Sarge always said was when we go to these tournaments, it gives us a chance to bond as a family. So we spend a lot of time hanging out and going into the rooms or going to the movies. It's a different strategy that we use from the high school standpoint, because you probably only go on the road for a long period of time twice, you know, a Christmas tournament, and maybe if you're fortunate and you go far in the state, you spend the night and you do some things. So it's definitely a bonding time for us. But on that point, when I coached in college, one of the things that we evaluated is what the coaches did with their kids in the spare time. Because, you know, some of these real fancy programs, you have a young coach that, all right, takes him to the hotel, and then he takes off and goes and does his own thing. So a lot of times, us as college coaches, we used to kind of evaluate and look and see who supervises their kids, who does it, and how their kids handle themselves on the road with a little bit of supervision. So it's a lot of different ways on how you look at that.
You know, one of the traditions that we started back when C and I coached together, when we went on long trips to the Nationals, and we were, you know, 3 or 4 day trip, we would get up and run every morning.
Yeah.
That's some bonding for you.
Yeah.
Because we did it, and your son played, and did some other things too. But that was a special group.
Well, coaches, we're gonna get ready to go here to a break in a second, but I want to, Sarge, I want you to elaborate on one tradition that I know you had, I referenced it earlier, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Coach C, I'm gonna get you to expound a little bit more on that coaching, the college coaching aspect, and we'll touch on that right on the other side of the break. This is Beyond Winning. I'm here with Coach Kerry Sargent, Coach Clarence Johnson. I'm Richard Lancaster, and we'll be back in a second. Welcome back to Beyond Winning. I'm here with Coach Kerry Sargent and Coach Clarence C.J. Johnson. I'm Richard Lancaster. And before we went to the break, we were talking about the events that happen when teams are traveling for, you know, either short weekend tournaments or long periods of time. And we talked about some of the things that the coaches do to make that time productive. When we had the break, I brought up the experience, Kerry, and I don't know if this was a tradition or not. I know that the time that I experienced it, I thought it was really a phenomenal part of your program. But you literally had a chef supreme who was who had a system, had an organization, and people didn't want to go nowhere. They wanted what she was serving up. Talk to us about that experience.
Well, you know, the setup was we would go to Orlando for the Super Showcase Internationals, which meant it was about a 8 to 10 day trip most of the time if we had a good team. One of my assistant coaches, brother Abdullah Munir Muhammad, frat brother, just so you know.
Yeah.
And his wife.
I like that about you. You stand up. Can't it never be said.
Hey, that's how we do.
That's how you do.
If you're the best, you gotta let everybody know.
Straight, no chaser. Never lessens down. I like that.
But we would always stay in condos. We would have a condo for the coaches and condo for the kids, and Miss Saida, Coach Munir's wife, would always come. She would drive. She was like the team mom. She loved doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But she was an excellent cook.
Excellent.
And she would plan these meals for the whole week before we got there. And as soon as we got there, we'd go to Walmart shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And every day she had breakfast, midday meal, and dinner, and It was an outstanding time. We did that probably about 6 or 7 years going to the Nationals.
Yeah.
So a lot of kids got a chance to experience that. And like you said, during that time, we got a chance to talk and, you know, become closer as a team. And it helped us be a little bit more successful, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, that was the one time it got the kids away from those electronics.
Yeah.
And you know, and people and they laid for that. I mean, they, you know, they was turning down opportunities,
no doubt,
you know,
no,
from that standpoint. Yeah, Coach CJ, you had mentioned a little earlier. You were talking about from the college coach perspective. Mm-hmm. And the last time we had Kerry on, we talked some about recruiting, and we talked about the recruiting process. Speak to it a little bit. Or speak to us a little bit from your experience as a college coach in that recruiting, the types of things that you look for.
Well the recruiting process is a lot different now, but when I was fortunate enough to do it, there's a lot of ways that we attacked it. But one of the things that we really observed, number one, how the kids handled being on the road and what they did, how they occupied their time and things of that nature. But recruitment has advanced so much now. These scouting services and reports, and they were viable back then when I did it, but now it's at a whole nother level. I'll never forget my boss. He always wanted us to subscribe to all those different scouting services, and in lower and mid-major colleges, the big thing was, who else in our conference is recruiting that kid? Because if somebody else in the conference is recruiting them, we need to recruit them. And it was always a competition that way. You know, recruiting now is just, you know, a lot of times some kids commit even before they get into their spring and summer season. So it's a whole lot different now.
Wait a minute. Why don't you give your resume? Tell the public about your history of coaching. See, a lot of people don't know. They just think that you're a regular brother, but you need to let them know the history of where you've been coaching. You just didn't coach at Podunk University. You were a big-time college coach. Go ahead, tell them. You want me to tell
them? Well, man, this dude is my publicist, man. I really appreciate that. And I've been fortunate. I've had a unique experience. I've been able to coach at all levels, except for the NBA, you know. Recreational, middle school, high school, junior college, Division II, and Division I. So, and I've seen it all at all levels. And one of the frustrations that I have as a high school coach is sometimes parents really don't understand. It's a small difference between your mid majors and low major Division I programs and good D2 programs. The meals are the same, you know. And the bigger programs, they fly to the games, but after that, everybody else rides a charter bus. And when I was at Boston University, the only time we flew to games were when we went to the NCAA tournament, or if we were going like to play. We were in the American East, at that time, the American East, so if we had to go play Maine or Albany or somebody like that, weather, we might have to fly. But I used to use this thing, do you want your uniforms dry cleaned or you want your uniforms washed? Do you want to ride in a van, mm-hmm. or you want to ride in a charter bus? You know, I used to use all kind of motivational things in talking to the kids, but parents really don't realize it's a real small difference. Because, like I was sharing with you earlier, when I look at our players, I look at, because my background is heavy in the CIAA, I look at, can you play in the CIAA? This is both women and men. Because in a high-level Division II conference like the CIAA, I'm willing to say 70% of those players have transferred back from D1 programs, and you got to be a baller in order to survive. So, but sometimes parents just get caught up in sticking their chest out and watching Sports Center and things of that nature, where their child might not even be at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Richard, what he hasn't told you is he's won at all those levels.
Yeah, that's, mm-hmm. I've been fortunate.
I mean, when he went to BU, they won the conference 2 years, the 2 years that he was there. I don't think they won since. You know? And so that's why I hang with C, because I know we're going to get some dubs.
Yeah, well, we've been fortunate because, you know, in college basketball, if you win your conference, you get a ring. So it's a lot of perks. And then when I was in Division II, what parents don't know, you go to the NCAA tournament, Division II as well, and you fly and you stay in nice hotels and you eat well.
And they went to the Elite Eight then.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, and you got your hype man over here, you know. I think, you know, what is significant about that is that you're bringing that back to these young men and women, you know, because you've been in that top tier of program. You understand what it takes to be successful in that top tier.
Let me tell you something. When we are alone or on the phone talking about our situation at Mallard Creek in particular, C is a lot more modest than I am. That's obvious. But I get upset sometimes at the parents not recognizing how fortunate they are to have the situation they have in terms of coaching at Mallard Creek. There's situations we could go other places and do a lot better in terms of financially, mm-hmm. with the knowledge that we bring to the game.
Or we could go to the boys' side.
Right.
We've actually sacrificed because we like what we're doing, don't get me wrong, and
right.
we're winning.
Yeah.
But we've been approached several times in reference to going on the boys' side, you know, at Mallard Creek and other places. But, you know, sometimes you gotta be smart and take, you know, and recognize the situation that you're in and continue to do good things.
But the idea that you just expressed, I mean, it's not really a matter of you know, being overly humble or tooting your own horn. It's an idea. And then I can't help but think that every day you go to practice, every time you're dealing with some young man, young woman, that your credibility shows and your lessons come out. And it's like, hey, this is the contribution that you're making. I mean, you're not wearing it on your sleeve, but it's the fact, and I want to say that, hey, there's young people that have sat back and observed and said, yes, I know what I'm getting into, but I know what I'm gonna, you know, experience by being with these two gentlemen.
Yeah, I think some people recognize the benefits of it, but some people, it doesn't matter what your background is as a coach. They want what they want the way they want it. And so they come at you from a, what are you going to do for my child? Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing it the way they want you to do it, it's going to be a problem. They don't respect history. That's a lot of what's going on with a lot of these kids and these young parents in particular. They don't respect history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't respect tradition. You know, they don't respect your contribution. And some of them don't know your contribution. And if you stood up, you know, like I just did, and talk about what we accomplished, you know, they look at you like you're crazy. Like, why are you doing that? But it's frustrating sometimes because you feel like they ought to know. But they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And Sarge always has to jog their memory and give them the history of our program. They just take for granted that, you know, we just win because we just win. But it's a lot of work that goes into that. But because they look at us, you know, he tried to explain to them how fortunate they were at this current banquet. And they still looked at him like, what is he talking about?
When you say Sarge has to jog their memory.
Oh, yeah.
See, I know how Sarge jogged the memory.
Right.
You know.
And this year he tried to play it off like, well, we had the banquet so late that I really don't remember all the stats. And he was trying to soften it up for them, but a lot of them don't realize how fortunate they were when their kids are gone and graduated. But in the process, it's my baby. That's all. You know.
Speak on that a little bit more about understanding the history. I mean, understanding how you convey that to them. Why that's important, and where you think they might miss that.
Well, I think kids nowadays and young people in general are not really that interested in history. They're interested in now. The microwave society, they're a prisoner of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of goes back to the argument between MJ and LeBron. Like, these kids said, I never saw Mike play, so what are y'all talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they seen films, they seen Dr. J, they like, they can't do what LeBron, I mean, they don't get it. So they really don't want to hear it. I don't spend a whole lot of time telling kids about my background as a player, my background as a coach, because they don't really want to hear that. What are you doing for me now, coach? Can you get me a scholarship?
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get me a scholarship, I can't get you nothing. Mm-hmm. You gotta earn a scholarship. All I can do is put you in a position to be seen by college coaches, and then if you listen to what I tell you, you might get a scholarship. But if you do what you do, you ain't getting nothing. And then when it comes to me supporting you or saying good things about you, how can I do that when you don't listen to me? How can I tell a coach, listen, this kid's going to be a great player, he's coachable, he works hard, when I don't see you do it? So it's a little bit of a struggle when you deal with kids that way. But when you do have a kid like that, it outweighs all the other struggles that you have.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
We've been fortunate with the girls in Nile Creek in recent years. We've had some outstanding players, and they keep us coming back. When we started at Nile Creek, see, and I didn't talk about this, but we said we're going to give them 10 years. Next year is 10 years. And we had all-state players on our team the last couple of years. We got an all-state player on our team now. She'll be a senior next year. 10 years.
I guess he got his message.
Yeah. Well, let me shift gears for a moment, and I'm going to bring in an unfortunate moment that happened last week at a tournament. I believe it was one of the Nike Session tournaments. Young kid was on one of the local teams here in Charlotte, and I believe might have had a medical condition. That medical condition led that player to collapse on the court. I think the player later on passed away, moved on. And while the particulars of that are not really what I wanted to get into, but I guess you two address that as a coach, particularly when you go on the road, for long periods of time. And, again, the responsibility that a coach has, for the well-being of, 10, 12, 15 players. So how do you approach that situation? What are the, what's your method and making sure that you get there in one piece to do what you need to do and that you get home safely?
Well, a lot of prayer, first of all, because, if you're the head coach, ultimately what happens with the program, with your team, with the kids, whether it's their own doing or something that happens accidentally, parents and people can hold you responsible. And my philosophy is always to try to be around, not let my kids be alone too long. If we go somewhere to the mall or anywhere, be close. So if anything happens, the parents can say that I wasn't there. Or like in our case, we never go out to clubs, we never hang out, we never do anything, like never have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I learned being with C.
Yeah.
We never did that.
Right.
And, you know, he mentioned before about some coaches just go drop the kids off at the hotel and go do whatever they do. That's not what we do. We do bed checks. We have curfews. We do all of that. But, you know, every time we go on a trip, I worry that everybody comes home safely. That's the thing I really think about is, you know, some kind of accident on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, kids getting arrested for whatever.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things. So ultimately, the parents don't blame you for letting it happen.
Because it's, I mean, you traveling, usually you're driving a van.
Yes.
Sometimes, you know, you're leaving early in the morning. Sometimes you're leaving, you know, midday, get there late at night. You got to think about a lot of things. I mean, you're thinking about not only the game, but the schedules, what time you got to be there, you know, all, you know.
Making sure all your kids are registered properly. You have uniforms, balls, everything. You gotta do it all and know it all. And of course, you got people supporting you while you do it, but it's a stressful situation if you know it's on you if things don't go right. And, you know, historically, whenever we would go on a long trip, like if we go to Orlando, when I came back home, I had to take 2 or 3 days off just to get my mind right to go back to my real job.
Mm-hmm. Because
I haven't gotten much sleep during that time because I'm constantly worried about what could, and I'm a worrier anyway, so this is a tough situation. The situation that you referred to up in Hampton, I can't imagine being the coach that had to make that call to the parents. That's the worst thing that I could think of having to do. And the coach had, you know, nothing to do with it, I mean, in terms of it wasn't his fault or whatever, but still.
Yeah, it's
tough.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that, and you know, you think, you know, of all the things that, you know, I mean, that you want to, you know, go through.
I can tell you what I thought of. There was two things that I thought about. Once we went to Myrtle Beach, C and I have different memories of this particular incident, but once we went to Myrtle Beach, and we were playing, and there was a guy on Jerry Stackhouse's AU team that collapsed on the court. And as I remember it, they shut the tournament down, you know, because it was an invitational.
Mm-hmm.
But he survived, you know, it wasn't like that. But still, it was so traumatic that people were like, let's go home. You don't want to play. Another thing I thought about was, a little bit different was when DeMontez Stitt passed away and collapsed, and his brother called me, immediately afterwards, and the feeling that I had then, I was like, I can't imagine what those coaches were going through when this kid passed away. It's a terrible thing. I know it's my I won't say enemies, but my competitors, but I feel so bad for them, and that kid's family. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's and you mentioned the Stitt situation. I mean, that was impactful for a lot of people. I mean, from what I understand, you know, there were just he had touched a lot of people, there was a lot of, just a real sense of loss, you know, from that standpoint. Yeah. Again, when we talk about the soul of coaching, you know, and we talk about, you know, getting beyond those X's and O's, I mean, you know, here's a thing that comes into play. We don't want anything to happen, but, you know, we gotta be ready.
Right. Just let me make a comment in reference to CMS. CMS kind of protects you a little bit more now because they make so many mandatory type physical type concussion type heart type murmurs, all different type of things that they're putting into place where you can, you know, that you'll know ahead of the game. Player A has these issues, and if they don't meet these qualifications, they can't play. So they try to protect themselves and their employees in reference to dealing with kids with health issues. But that's always a fail of us as coaches, that because you got kids with asthma and all kind of things mm-hmm. now. So it's scary.
Yeah. Well, coaches, I'm gonna get you ready. Because you know, as a normal part of our program is the off the wall questions, okay? And I want to set it up. I want you guys to think about it. We're gonna take a short break, and when we come back, I'm gonna open it up for the off the wall question. I'm sure that there'll be a fair amount to say on this on the topic. This is Beyond Winning again with Coach Kerry Sargent and Coach C.J. Johnson, and this is Richard Lancaster. We'll be back in a second. Winning. I'm Richard Lancaster, and I'm here with Coach Kerry Sargent and Coach C.J. Johnson. And gentlemen, we're getting right to the end of the program, and normally we have what we call the off the wall question. So this off the wall question, and we were talking a little bit about the break. You got statistics that come into the game, analytics, analysis, it's bringing a different element to the game. And so the off-the-wall question is, sheet music or improvisation? That brought a smile to C's face. See, he's thinking of, Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Miles, Herbie Hancock.
My thing is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If I'm jamming and I'm feeling and I'm going in the right direction, I'm not gonna switch up. But I've learned as I've gotten older that I've got to adapt. Because one thing that's good about us, we've been able to change with the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest part. If we couldn't do that, then we would be struggling now. My former boss couldn't change with the game. He was locked into how they did it in the 60s and the 70s, and he just never could change, and the game kind of, passed him. But we've been fortunate to this point that we've been able to change with the game, And another big piece is we've been able to change in reference to parents and relationships and things of that nature.
Well, I think Kerry said it best in one of our programs is that you still, you two old heads that are still curious,
Yeah, I think when you talk about sheet music and improvisational, like I said, I'm from Mississippi. And I try to put everything in a certain perspective. When we're talking about coaching basketball, we like to get them down the floor. We like to trap, press. There's a certain amount of improvisation that goes along with that style.
Mm-hmm.
We're able to do that. But we're knowledgeable enough about the game that if we have to play half-court basketball, we have many, many plays, many, many sets that we can run if we have to play that way. That goes to your sheet music.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the thing is, because we are, I just said, because we are brothers coaching,
mm-hmm.
the assumption is that all we want to do is run down the floor and jack, that's what we want to do.
Freestyle.
Right.
Yeah.
And we do. Mm-hmm. And we want to do that.
Yeah.
I tell my kids, listen, the only reason we run plays is so all y'all won't be on the same side of the floor at the same time. We want floor space.
Right.
So you won't be bumping in each other. We want you to be able to put the ball on the floor, go to the rim, go by somebody, we want you to be able to do that. But we also want you to be smart enough that you're capable of learning how to play that style that you may have to play once you leave us.
Again, going back to teaching.
Right.
And passing something on.
Absolutely. And also, we don't want it to be said that all we do is play gorilla ball. That's the best word I can come up with for this situation. I've got other words for it, but I'm going to say that. Because that's what people do. That's what they say. The assumption is that that's what we do. I can say this about us at Mallard Creek. This is what I believe. And Sid say, he'll tell you, I say this all the time. We changed the way they play basketball in our conference, definitely, but also in Mecklenburg County. We did that. And it goes back to what I was talking about earlier about AAU basketball. When CJ got the job as coach at Mallard Creek, the reporter that reported it made sure he mentioned that he was a former AAU coach. And then I would be his assistant, and I was a long-term AAU coach.
Like AAU was not coaching.
It was something.
It's a different brand,
Different brand of basketball. So what really makes me proud of what we've been able to accomplish is that we changed the game. We got people trying to play the way we play. But they can't teach it the way we teach it because they don't have the experience that we have. That's just keeping it real. And they've gone to try to, you know, push the ball and the trap and do all that. You know, but that goes to improvisational sheet music.
Well, and I like something that in one of our discussions earlier you said is that you're almost looking at it almost like a chess match point of view. You come up with a play that you think will work offensively, and then you get on the other side and you say, well, defensively, what is the antidote?
If you're a coach and you don't do that, you're not coaching. Mm-hmm. You're putting kids out on the court. Mm-hmm. You mean, you got to be able to establish a defense principles, first of all, and you also got to be able to, when you're teaching your offensive sets, you're teaching your defense how to defend against that set, too. Because you're going to come up against somebody that's running the same stuff. All this stuff is not new. So you got to prepare your kids for what they're going to see. I think one of the things that we do best, and it's been our history, is we make adjustments that people don't understand how we do it. We make in-game adjustments. And at halftime, we always come out with different. We like Golden State when it comes to this.
I'm just giving you. We play Golden State type basketball. They're getting all that credit. They're getting all that credit for the type they play, brother basketball. You know, let's just keep it real with some high
brother ball, right?
with some high skill athletes.
Uh-huh.
You know, but they don't want to give us credit for making adjustments. That just, you know. They just overlook that.
But again, and I don't know if this is intentional. I don't know if your players get this, okay? But in another sense, you teaching negotiation. You teaching that interplay between, you know, hey, if you got one side, almost like debate. You know, you got to be able to take the one question and look at it from both angles.
Mm-hmm. I don't think a collective, in terms of players, get it. But I think you always have one or two players that understand what you're trying to do. And if you if they're vocal enough and smart enough, they can convey it to the rest of the team. Because, I mean, we're old guys. And that's another thing that I think bothers people. Like, we're some old guys that's getting it done.
They're always asking us when we're going to retire.
Right.
They don't ask Coach K when he's going to retire. Coach K damn is 70 years old. But when y'all... When y'all gonna retire?
It sounds like they're tired of being on the wrong side of the scoreboard. that's what it sounds like.
But it's just like that at Mallard Creek. It ain't like that with the Chardonnays. We be getting our butt beat. So we don't have the money we used to, but it's hard to compete. But yeah, they at least we're paranoid about what we think people feel about us, because it doesn't seem like. In terms of CJ being the head coach, he gets, in my opinion, the kind of recognition that he deserves. If somebody else was doing what we've done at Mountain Creek, it would be like, you know what I'm saying? It could be crazy. We won over 200 games in 9 seasons. We lost 50. That's 22.3. See, this is what I do to the parents. I give these statistics.
That's his analytics.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That's over 22 wins a season. They only allow you to have 24 regular season games. We average 22 a game for 9 years. I'm just saying.
You're just coming out of the gate, you know.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
This was kind of like, you know, if you know, going into next season, if you two are on the bench, just rolling out of bed, y'all good for 22.
Look, our goal every year is to win 20 games and win the conference. Everything else is great. We've been fortunate enough to win the conference 5 times in 9 years.
What we're going to have to do as we continue this conversation, because you've raised a lot of different ideas.
That's
and
I
concepts.
That's
yeah.
What I do.
And we're going to have a discussion on some of these other things that you bring into play. Because I think that's important. And it's part of what this program is trying to get at. Because we don't want, you know, the experience and the wisdom that, you know, you guys have gained over the past 30 years. And it's almost like when you know, we have other guests on the program, a straight line is drawn back to you guys from that standpoint. And I think there's a lot of wisdom, there's a lot of achievement, and there's a lot of just giving and that honoring the responsibility of being a coach that's out there, that we like that, you know, we like that to be known from that standpoint. So, gentlemen, as always, I'm glad, again, that you guys were able to come out, participate, you know, deliver us, that knowledge, that background, and do it in your own way with your own flavor. You know, I use those nicknames. I use them affectionately, but
you got people calling me that too.
Yeah, Nick calling me
that. I mean, you know, hey, there it is. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
This has been Beyond Winning. I've been here with Coach Kerry Sargent, effectively known as Straight No Chaser, and Coach Clarence Johnson, CJC, we appreciate you listening to the program. So please, if you get an opportunity, you can catch us now. We got a Twitter handle, BW_SOC. You can email us at Beyond Winning, the Soul of Coaching @gmail.com. Check us out and give us some comments. Tell us what you liked. Tell us what you think we need to improve on. Tell us where, you know, we kept you interested, or tell us where we might have put you to sleep. But in any regard, just please tell us. So we end the program, I like to say, stay aware and stay on it, but definitely please stay with it. This has been Beyond Winning with Richard Lancaster. Take care.